I was dead from wrong, and I'll die in
here. Welcome to our group.
And this ought to show it right here.
Do you or someone you know suffer from depression? If so, please contact the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Defender 7 Medical Tuesday Show with your host, our Colonel, Kimberly Purvis. Now, for those of you new just tuning in to us, please check out our national Facebook page by typing in the search box, all capital letters, Defenders 7. Now, before you hit that join button, just know that we expect all of our members and future members to participate throughout everything we do here in the Defender 7. Now, if you feel it's not for you, you may leave. No hard feelings. Also, you get a chance, please hop over to YouTube, check out our Defender 7 YouTube channel, and click that subscribe button for us. We also have a website. If you type in all lowercase letters, www.defenders, Roman numeral V as in Victor, with two small eyes, .com. On our site, you'll find that we have a store and a donate button. 100% of all proceeds from sales from our store and any donations we bring in go back to our communities throughout all 50 states in a time of need. We're not like the other groups where they keep 90% and only distribute 10%. All 100%. Goes back to our communities. So by all means, please help us out. Purchase something from our store or hit that donate button. Help us to help you and your community in a time of need. We're also on MeWe. If you click on organizations and scroll down, Defenders 7 Humanitarian American Patriot Group. Now, for all of our shows we do here on Blog Talk, if you feel uncomfortable with calling in, we have a chat room that is live during our shows here. But either way, number to call to participate, area code 914-205-5773. Again, number to call, area code 914-205-5773. And I'm now going to turn the microphone over to your host, our Colonel, Kimberly Purvis.
Howdy, howdy.
Good evening. How are you?
Tired.
Gee, why?
I don't know fucking why. It's still trying to get used to working. Good God.
I
had eight people yesterday, and I didn't get a chance to chart on them, so I've been charting on them today. I charted on some yesterday, and then I spent 3 hours in the office today. We got some shit straightened out, but we'll see how this – they don't do mileage. They do travel pay. And anything outside of Wichita, they pay $5, $7, $10, $20, and $30 every time you have to go to that area. Now, if you have like two, three, four patients in that area, you only get paid mileage for one of them, which makes sense because I got four in Valley Center, and they're only like a mile, 2 miles apart. So, I mean, I get that. But, yeah, I was telling you I had to go like from my house 25 miles to Goddard to Valley Center and then to East Bumfuck, Alabama, down at the bottom of South Wichita. And I've done like 400 or 500 miles in a week. And I'm like, uh-uh, this shit ain't cutting it. So we'll see after I went today and spent 3 hours in the office. But the only thing is, what makes no sense, it goes from 7 to 10 miles, 11 to 20 miles, and 21 to whatever, whatever, out of Wichita. But I got one patient who's in Wichita, but he's 22 miles from the office, and she will not pay the $10 to go see him because he's technically still in Wichita. So I'm like, well, I'm not going to go see him. You'll pay someone. See, it's the way the office is, right? And it's I forget what highway it is. There's 135 that goes right through Wichita. 40 goes right in the middle of it. 96 goes up. There's a circle, kind of like Atlanta, where 285 goes around Atlanta. We have the same thing.
Right.
And I can't think it. I think it's 235 goes all the way around. So I'm like, if it's within that circle, you shouldn't get mileage because everything's 5-10 miles apart. So even though it's Wichita, it's still, you got to go from my house to this guy's house is like 25 miles. Doesn't matter. He's still in Wichita, which is bullshit. But I should be getting like between $60 and $80 a week compensation for gas. So that
sure
will make up for all the bullshit. I've already filled my car. I've already put in $134 in gas in a week.
I don't doubt it.
But, well, no, see, Pat does 40 miles a day because he goes to Valley Center also, but he's there all night. So it's like actually it's 50 miles, 25 there and 25 back, and that's every day. So he's also adding on to the gas. But anyway, so hopefully if I don't get screwed over and I do get my gas and all that, I'll stay. If not, I'll wait till I get back from Tennessee, and then I'm going to go do pediatric home health and hospice. They actually have a pediatric home health and hospice. It's going to be hard, but I'm with one child all day. You know, you're there either 4, 8, or 12 hours, and you get paid mileage, and you get paid the more medical equipment they are. The you know, unfortunately, you get paid more. So we'll see.
we shall see.
But
yeah.
I've got all kinds of Jesus, Mary, and Joseph patients. I got one. I can't say names. That's a HIPAA thing. I'll just tell you. He's paranoid schizophrenic. No, he's not paranoid. He's a bipolar schizophrenic. And I swear to God, he's got ADHD, ADD, OCD, pick an alphabet soup, and this guy is like bouncing off the walls. And he's like, and throw in some, sprinkle some anxiety on top of that. And I'm like, dude,
like
you can't breathe. Jesus. He's like,
what's up?
I'm like, you're gasping. I said, you're gasping for air. Put your oxygen on. He wouldn't do it. I'm like, dude, put. And so this is what home health nurses go through. We got non-compliant patients who won't take their insulin. I have one that told me she's allergic to needles and she just won't do it. So over the weekend, she does not get her insulin on Saturday and Sunday, which is not a good thing. I give it to her Monday through Friday, And then she's got, like I said, she has severe lymphedema where her thighs are 40 inches wide each.
Wow.
And her calves are like probably 20. And then her ankles, and she's like a size 5 for a shoe. So that just tells you how disproportionate she is. But here's the thing. Everybody knows, especially anybody in the military, the more weight you have on your knees, the harder it is on your knees. And she tried to tell me, nope, it's not the lymphedema. Nope, that's not why your knees hurt. Okay. And it's like I'm talking to a brick wall with some of these people, and it's like, okay. Some of them, it's like, okay, you're in, you're out. And for anybody out there who's interested in doing something different, like hospice and home health, some companies have both, and they can transition to hospice. It's very hard. I saw the guy. I just got this guy Friday. Found out he had stage 4 cancer. It's already metastasized throughout his body, right? Yesterday, he's in so much excruciating pain that they're going to be putting him into hospice on Friday, this Friday. So it's hard, you know, to watch him go from, he's a combination of you, Weathers, John, me, kind of like, He's a retired EMT, so he don't give it. He's got the I don't give a shit attitude, you know. And he has our, you know, he hates COVID. He thinks it's bullshit too. He doesn't want me to wear a mask. You know, he's like, I you could tell you got common sense. You're not going to come see me sick. I'm like, no. So we got along great. To yesterday, to being in so much pain that I had to call his doctor to get his pain medication given early. And I'm like, look, I can't give it to you an hour early. I can lose my license for that. Now, can I say that your sister can't? No, I can't. I don't advise it. So I said, but I could do it as much as a half hour early. And I did. I felt so bad. He was crying. A grown-ass man crying in pain. Says cancer is very painful. So I see them putting him on morphine and other stuff possibly. But, yeah, it's definitely it's worth the job, but you have to be prepared for your patients to rapidly decline, you know? You have to be prepared
right.
for that. But for most of the time, we discharge our patients because we have them. Some we have them long-term, some – and most of them have, like, wound backs, and that's when their wound is so bad, it could be a big wound or whatever, and the wound back pulls everything out, and it puts it in this little canister, you don't, you know, and all that, and we have to change the dressing, all this yada, yada, yashmada. But some have regular dressing changes and, you know, all this. It's basic, and I just have to get back into the swing of it and all of that. But I swear to God, probably I – Huh?
I'm proud of you. You're back in the trenches.
I know. Big time. Have you, and some people don't understand this, the smell of death. They smell like death. I have quite a few wound vacs, but it just smells like death. I can't really describe it. But unfortunately, when you go home, all I could smell was that, but it's in your clothes. So that's why when I do really sick patients, none of my scrubs get washed with any of my other clothes. I come home, take off my uniform, throw it in the wash, and it's just you cannot wear the same uniform another day. It's just one of those things. But anywho, I wanted to go ahead and finish up this card for our vitamins and minerals and stuff like that. Bobby, we stopped at the musculoskeletal disorders, right? when you're lacking?
Yeah.
We did stomach.
Yeah.
Okay, we did stomach. Okay. And now that Dr. Phil's on, woohoo, he can also go more in depth. this card I got, it's really cool. I know. This card that I got, it covers all your vitamins and minerals and trace minerals and all that. And then what it did was it goes over, like, your cardiovascular, your stomach, and it tells you what it recommends, all the different vitamins it recommends, and then the dosage. But like I've said, we've said before you start any over-the-counter vitamins and minerals, talk to your doctor or dietitian before you do anything. We don't want you to take something that is contraindicating to your illness or whatever. So we don't want to do that stuff. So, and then we can go over some diets afterwards because I don't really have anything else. But as far as musculoskeletal, for like arthritis, it recommends calcium, folic acid, magnesium, selenium, all of your vitamin Bs, B complex 3, 5, 6, and 12, vitamin C, E, and K, and zinc. Now, all of your recommended daily allowances are probably going to be different, wouldn't they, Dr. Phil? By age?
Yes, by age and weight.
Okay. Yeah, that's why I'm not giving out the – I started to, and I'm like, okay, that's a lot. So I was just going over, like, which ones are what they recommend, and then, like I said, talk to your doctor.
What's recommended? What's recommended from a functional medicine standpoint is micronutrient testing to see if you truly actually need those vitamins, if you're deficient in them.
True. Yeah, that's why I said talk to your doctor and all that good stuff. Because not every doctor. What kind of doctor are you again? You do the
general family practice.
No. Not holistic, but what's the other?
We practice functional medicine.
And okay,
we
functional
also,
medicine.
Yeah, functional medicine and traditional medicine.
Okay.
And when, you try to combine
the
two.
Huh?
You try to combine the two. I mean, when you can't control something functionally, then, sometimes you have to go to the traditional medicine. And with your non-compliant patients, a lot of times you probably just want to use traditional medicine because they either don't understand or they don't care. And so you just put them on a blood pressure lowering medication and tell them that they need vitamin D and calcium and zinc and all that good stuff. And they'll be like, well,
I got some that are compliant. Well, for the most part, with blood pressure meds.
Yeah. You tell a diabetic to lower their carbs and they can't get off with the soda.
Yeah. I've got some that she's like, one lady, she's like, I don't have time to bother with oxygen. Okay. How do you respond to people that's totally, completely not compliant? I mean, I could sit there and preach to them until kingdom come. It could be like 87, 88, 89, and they're short of breath when walking. Oh, I'm fine. Okay. And they get an oxygen concentrator. She's like, I just don't have time for that.
There's an old saying, a person will sit in their own shit until they're tired of smelling it, and then they'll finally pick themselves up and clean themselves off. So, until she figures out, hey, this oxygen actually makes me feel better, it's going to be inconvenient for her because people get used to a certain lifestyle, and that lifestyle change is very, it's very difficult. So for a person who doesn't want to be seen as being infirmed, don't want to use oxygen, and they don't want other people seeing them use the oxygen, so they would prefer to be out of breath and suffering, and they would be putting on that nasal cannula.
And it's like, I've noticed that here in Wichita, we have a lot of lymphedema patients, a lot. My youngest was like 37, and the oldest one is in her 70s, and hers is okay. It's mild. It's not the older lady. And then one gentleman, it's so bad. I mean, his thighs look like calves. And he's got cellulitis on top of that. And I'm like, can I look at it? He goes, oh, this leg is fine. And it literally looks like someone stuck a hot iron to his leg, and it's that beet red. And it's that bad. And he's one of those. He stays in his room 24/7. I guess he lives with his brother. And he never leaves his room. And I told him, do you prop your feet up to help him swing? Well, oh, okay, that means no. When they, well, you know, that always means no, but they don't do it.
Yeah, lymphedema is hard to treat, too.
Oh, it is.
Yep.
Now,
lymphedema, it doesn't respond as well to traditional diuretic.
No, because all of mine are on high doses of diuretic. And there is one thing that's different. The lymphedema wrap compared to an ACE wrap.
Give me about 5 minutes. No, I've got something to do, but I told him give me about 5 minutes. I'm gonna hang out with you guys for a little bit.
Okay. She complains constantly about ACE wraps. She says her ACE wraps are making it worse. But what's the real difference between a lymphedema wrap and an ACE wrap? Because
it's just compression. That's the whole thing. Depending on your insurance, we actually have these, they're like balloons, you know, you put on your legs, and then they have a pressure from like an air compressor that will keep a certain amount of pressure on the legs at all times. Problem is, you know, you can't be very mobile when you have those things. So,
oh, yeah, they do those at the hospital. But, no, these are just regular wraps, and they look like an ACE wrap, but they're not the same material, and they stretch differently, and they cling differently, too.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. But the problem with them is that, you know, sometimes they're too tight, and they are uncomfortable, and you can also impede your circulation just because of them. You're trying to squeeze the fluid out. But you don't want to have a tight compression. You just want to have a slight compression. And as it starts squeezing the fluid out, it becomes loose. Then you have to readjust it. And it becomes loose, and you have to readjust it. But if you have it too tight, you're actually compressing other things that you shouldn't be compressing. And so circulation comes, you know, that you start getting numbness, tingling, pain, you know, all kinds of things just because it's, and that's the thing I like about the automated ones is that they will keep a certain pressure. So as the edema starts, you know, being pushed up further in the body, it actually puts a little more pressure on as it's needed, but it's not enough to make you feel uncomfortable.
Yeah, I look, and those lymphedema wraps, like they look like ACE wraps, and then they have the ones with their Velcro. They have those. I mean, they can get up there and cost. And they just don't want to, insurance companies just don't want to pay for it, period.
Nope.
You know.
No, they don't.
Is there anything that, aside from the wraps and the LASIK, anything else that people could do if they have lymphedema? I mean, until now, I've never really taken care of lymphedema patients.
Yeah, they would have to get, either drains put in or bypass them.
Oh, okay.
So they could put a drain from, you know, one point and drain it into the bladder, or they could drain it back into, you know, the venous system. But you know how they have the AV shunts when you have dialysis?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, well, they could do a shunt for lymphedema, but once again, that's, you know, all insurances don't cover that, and sometimes it actually makes situations worse. You put, you know, foreign objects in your body might reject it, things like that. But the problem is you got to treat the underlying cause of the lymphedema, and a lot of times it's hard to figure out what's causing it. I had lymphedema in a 25-year-old female unilateral one side of the leg, and it was just all swollen. 3 weeks later, she was dead because she had a tumor. She had a tumor in her pelvis that was pushing on the lymphatic system, causing the backup. But she died.
Oh, yeah.
25-year-old. Yeah. So finding the cause of the edema is the bad thing. Females who have mastectomies, they will remove lymph nodes, and that will start, you know, you'll see a lot of left arm or right arm lymphedema status post-mastectomy. And it's just a matter of they just don't have the plumbing, I guess you could put it in, you know, layman's terms, to drain that fluid back off. It just kind of builds up. So hard to treat.
Oh, yeah, I've noticed, and there's a lot. I noticed also there's more diabetics that have lymphedema as well.
A lot of diabetics that I come across, it's not necessarily lymphedema, but it's a venous stasis or you know, it's a peripheral vascular disease that's causing, you know, or congestive heart failure, you know. So there's different kinds of edema. Lymphedema is associated with the lymphatic system, but you can also have a venous stasis edema, which is because the heart's not pumping enough to return the fluid back through the venous system to the heart, because they call that congestive heart failure. But then you can also get that same type of fluid in your lungs, too.
Yeah, the one guy that's like, my left leg's fine, he's got the cellulitis. You could tell, I mean, it's cellulitis. He has congestive heart failure and lymphedema, so they say, and he's only in his mid to late 40s. He's not that old.
And yeah, he's got really, like, that sounds like peripheral arterial disease if he's got the cellulitis. But
okay.
I've seen edema so bad that it actually starts poking holes through the skin so it can drain out.
Yes, I had that when I lived in Georgia, when I worked at St. Francis, the heart hospital. This gentleman's, his skin, it was so much that all you had to do was touch him, seep out his skin.
Uh-huh, yeah, and that's where those compressions come in handy, you know. That's when you want to use those compressions. And once again, like you said, the elevation, the lifestyle change, the low-sodium diet, controlling the blood pressure. And, you know, a lot of times if your kidneys are failing, and like as in dialysis, there's no way to remove the fluid, you know. And, you know, how do you put a person on a diuretic if their kidney's not even making urine, you know? So it's tough.
Oh, okay, yeah. Yeah, I know. Back when I was telling Bobby, I said, I've been thrown to the wolves with a lot of these. And I'm like, oh, my God, I haven't seen some of this in a while. Having to catch up, read up on it, and then they got mad at me because I refused to do a pleural fusion vac, a drain. And I'm like, that's not part of my, I was never trained at LPNs or not.
On your scope of practice, right? Uh-huh.
Yeah, on my scope of practice. And they're like, well, we can train you. I said, that's cool. If you want to train me and certify me, because you can, they do IV certifications, and every state's different for LPN, but not over the phone. That's not proper training, and it's a sterile. I don't care about the sterile dressing and all this other stuff. And it's like, you know, I've noticed every state's different with how they do certain procedures. You know what I'm saying? It's like Georgia, Alabama, Tennessee, and Florida have their own separate way of doing sterile dressings compared to Kansas and other states. They just do it totally different.
It's all legal BS. Well, it's
no,
all that legal
kidding.
BS. Huh?
No kidding.
It is. The reason why they adopt those measures are based upon things that have occurred in the past regarding lawsuits.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So they adopt the medical board asked me to
go to a tick line dressing. And I'm like, nope. She's like, but it's just a dressing change. Yeah, I don't care. It's a sterile procedure.
How about changing out a G-tube?
That I could do.
Uh-huh.
LPNs are allowed to do that. If it comes out, if
not
the patient
in all
pulls it out. No, not in all states. That's what I but they, I know I can in Florida, Georgia, Alabama, and Tennessee. I know I can in those states because I did it.
Yeah, and well, then it goes one step further. Okay, for example, depending on the rules of, say, if you're in a nursing home, the nursing home might have rules adopted that say all, you know, G-tube changes have to be done under ultrasound in the hospital. They won't do them in the nursing home because the nursing home don't want the liability. So,
you know what they told us? In Tennessee, I did group home, and there were group like 2, 3, 4 patients living in a home, and we stayed there every, you know, there was always a CNA and always a nurse there. And we had one person, she pulled her G-tube out. And they're like, we need to put it back in. I'm like, no, I don't. Because, one, I've never done it. So they're like, just stick a Foley catheter in there and they'll send her out because she was bolus feed. So that's what we had to do. Stick a Foley in there and did the balloon to hold it in place. And then they're like, okay. And so
the challenge with that is sometimes the stomach will move and that tube will not even go in the stomach. It'll just go into the abdominal cavity and then you got some serious problems.
I know. And that's why I wouldn't do it. I'm like, I'm not doing it. I had to call the house manager. I'm like, you come to it. She's an RN. I'm like, you come to it.
Yeah.
She's like, well, check the residual. I don't care. I'm not doing it. Get mad at me all you want. It's my license. I worked hard for it.
And that's the cool thing about the scope of practice. Even though you may be certified to do something, you still can refuse to do it if you're not comfortable with it.
Oh,
that's
okay.
The cool thing. You say, look, I'm just not comfortable with this. And even though, you know, it's within my scope of practice, I just don't feel comfortable doing it. And they cannot fault you for that. Because the ultimate thing, do no harm.
LPNs can't do IVs. Yeah, the do no harm. See, LPNs can't do IVs in every state. And if you get certified, you can use it.
They can if they're certified in phlebotomy.
No. You could go to each facility can certify you, but once you leave that facility, you're no longer certified. So, and then like Kansas, if you get certified, you could take a class, and that IV certification could go anywhere in the state of Kansas. So it's different for every state.
You can become certified in phlebotomy. It just depends on where you're at, I suspect, like is what you're saying.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I
but
know.
If you're
it's
certified
in
phlebotomy and you're an LPN or LVN, then you can do both if, as long as you know your employer is aware that okay, I'm an LVN, but we don't let LVNs do IV, but I'm also certified in phlebotomy through the state, and then they may or may not change their policy.
That's like some of our RNs have no clue how to do a wound vac. And they won't touch it. They don't know how to do it. It's not out of their scope of practice, so they don't know how to do it. And so it's either one, laziness, or, you know, because the home, you know, it's like, I'd rather not touch it. So that's how they get out of it. And it's like whatever. But now as an LPN, when we do peds, like for pediatrics, I could do pediatrics in home health, but not in a hospital. LPNs cannot work on a pediatric floor, but you can in home health.
But that's a business decision. The hospitals are civilian businesses, and they make their rules and adopt their rules on what you can and cannot do by the board of directors. It's not a state-mandated, rule.
Oh, okay.
So each hospital,
yeah, I know.
Hospital
they,
can
be, they're
yeah.
LPNs can't do ER, they can't do ICU, and that's pretty much every state, which I think is stupid, but I guess it depends on how long you've been a nurse.
Not true. That's not true, because based on the hospital, because here in Texas, the big hospitals, the big chains, you're right, they want an RN. They do have LVNs, but in the hospitals, the LVNs are treated like CNAs, you know? or any
I know.
Medical assistance. But
if
you go to one of the privately owned smaller hospitals, you're going to find CNAs as surgical techs in the smaller hospitals. So I know for a fact my ex was a CNA, and she's working as a surgical tech when they would normally have an RN in that position in a big hospital.
Yeah, and that's like that's why I was debating on staying where I'm at, or I was offered a pediatric home health and hospice, and that's I'm debating on which one to go to. But see, with the pediatrics, they're on ventilators. They have trach care. They have G-tubes. They have all kinds. They have CPC. I mean, there's so many. And you use all of your nursing skills, you know, plus more. And I might actually just go back into pediatrics because I really enjoyed it. They're more compliant. They're easier to, you know.
Yeah, their minds aren't as closed as the adults are. But you're also going to get those pediatric kids who have been sick all their life, and they've been dealing with doctors and nurses, and then they just get fed up with it, and then they become non-compliant. So there are some non-compliant peds.
And the one good thing you could do with kids, though, is you could play games, and you could do certain things to get them to take their medicine if it's not a G-tube feed. You know what I'm saying? You can't play them stupid games like Airplane with an adult to take their medicine, you know. And it's,
well, sometimes you got to use child psychology on adults, too. So.
No kidding. I'm telling you. And some of them... And the other thing that I noticed is a lot of them are lonely, and they just want to talk. And
well, a lot of them are scared too, and a lot of them have been bullshitted. Oh, this is gonna make you better, but it didn't make me better. You know, take this; it'll make you better. Did it make me better? You know, lying to kids.
Yeah.
Kids aren't as dumb as we treat them sometimes. You know, they're pretty smart. And if you can explain it to them just like you explain to an adult, this is how it can work. And even though they may not understand it, they appreciate the honesty, I think. So I think they can tell when the medical professionals are lying to them. Especially the ones that are chronic. You know, they've been around a long time. They've been doctor after doctor, and they're like, this guy's full of shit. Because some of them actually start to realize that it's a money game with these doctors.
I do, too. I really do. And it's like, and I know we have a lot of sounds-alike medications, and it freaks people out. And I have a couple of those patients who have this. Well, I'm allergic to it. No, but it's not the same drug. And you have to, and I've had to look it up and show them that this is not the same. Was it digoxin? And And there's another one. They sound alike, but they're not
digitalis.
The same family.
Yeah,
it might be.
Digitalis and, dioxin. There's a lot of sound alike medicine. I did pediatrics for about a year, and I went into pediatrics with like an open heart because I really, really like kids. I found out I don't like pediatricians because I think they're all about the numbers. It's about the productivity. It's about the productivity of their providers. And if you want to spend a minute or two talking to the parents, trying to educate the parents, because the parents are the worst patient when it comes to the PD population.
You're dealing with the child, but
you're dealing with parents, and they're the worst ones to deal with. So if you take a little bit of time and get to know the family and get a little personal with them, they get your trust, and you can actually treat the child better. These pediatricians, want you in the room 2 minutes and out and done, and next. They want that 100 kid per day quota. That's why I quit pediatrics, because I don't like pediatricians.
Oh, okay. But see, I know, and the other thing is, like you were saying, when some of these sick kids where they've been sick their whole life, the parents act like they know more than the doctors and the nurses.
Oh, yeah.
Those
doctor
are the,
fucking
they're the hardest doctor ones to take care of.
Yeah. Well, and you know,
I've had a few of those.
Yeah, the other thing you got to consider, too, when you're doing your practice, Colonel, is that people do have a lot of access to medical information, and sometimes they do know more than you do about certain subjects.
Oh, yeah.
And so you have to have that open mind and listen to them and say, oh, well, that's really interesting. You taught me something. And then, you know, sometimes they're going to go back and say, oh, yeah, I'm having to teach my doctor because they don't know anything. But then, you know, but then once you know you have a weakness, that's where you get strong for the next time it happens, you know. You might lose a few along the way, but in the end, you're going to gain a whole lot more.
Oh, yeah. I mean, she was 17 or 18, and her little boy was, he had a ventilator, but he wasn't on it. They were weaning him off of it, and it was like they would treat, it didn't matter what nurse or doctor, it didn't matter, that they knew more than the doctor, and it was like, okay, sure you do. It's one of those, you just want to shake the parents. It's just doctors and nurses are the worst patients to take care of.
Yep, true. Yep. Well, the only reason you'll have a doctor or nurse as a patient is because it's unethical to prescribe for themselves or their families, right? So they'll come in and they'll tell you what they want. I mean, this is what I want, and I, you know, this is the way I want it. I mean. And then you're like, well, not what I want. I don't think that would be the right thing for you. So then you have to go through and start explaining the pathophysiology thing down to the metabolic level. And once you can convince them that you're right, you know, you made a patient. But a lot of times their argument is, no, this is the only thing that's going to work. And it's hard to argue with other doctors. Because
when they're retired. Especially when they're retired.
Well, you know, a lot of doctors don't want to lose patients, and so they will kind of give in to the wishes of their patients sometimes, too. Like a patient comes in and says, look, I got this cold, and you know it's viral, but nothing works for me but a Z-Pak. I need a Z-Pak. What's the harm of giving them a Z-Pak? Well, you know, the antibiotic resistance, all of that other things, yeah, it could be harmful. But you give them the Z-Pak that first time, and now you have a patient. But then the next time you don't give it to them, and then, you know, you start educating them. So a lot of doctors
will. My mom
will,
is that kind of patient.
Yeah, they'll give in to the whims of the patient just to keep a patient. They say, I left that other doctor because it was no good, and I came to you because I heard you were good. And then it's like, well, the only thing works for me is that Z-Pak, and that other doctor wouldn't give it to me. And then, you know, maybe you'll give them a Z-Pak the first time, and then you're like the next time, you're like, well, you know, maybe the Z-Pak's not the right choice this time. And, you know, and then either you have a good patient that's going to listen to you, or it's a patient you really don't need. Let them go somewhere else.
Yeah, and that's where they call it shopping for a doctor, and that's why we have the opioid crisis that we have.
No,
you're
wrong. I'm going to cut you off there. The reason we have the opioid crisis is because of the illegal drugs that are coming into the country. It's not the Tylenol, it's not the codeine, and it's not the, you know, the lorazepam, what is it, the hydrocodone, and the, you know, it's the illegal opioids.
All right, tell that to the VA doctors. That's what they blame it on.
No,
I shit you not.
No, it's because the states are making a political issue out of this opioid crisis because it's a political issue, but it's filtering down the medicine field. And so now your government-run agencies like the DEA are putting limits to doctors, and they're watching what doctors do when it comes, you know, to opioids. You have to have special training, so much CMEs every year on the stuff. And it's not even the opioids that they're talking about are not even the opioids that we're prescribing. That's the bad thing.
I know. And a lot of even some of the oncologists here, they don't want to prescribe morphine. They give them hydrocodone. Seriously? I mean, and a lot of the VAs, they're like, no, take Motrin or Tylenol. They don't want it.
Yep.
Anyone who was on pain management, they just stripped them of all of their pain meds. I have to fight for my migraine medication.
In Texas, you have to have Schedule 2 authority, which means it has to be written on the triplicate prescription.
Oh, okay.
And in Texas,
yeah,
only an MD can prescribe it, where PAs and NP, nurse practitioners and physician assistants, they could prescribe it before this opioid crisis came along. Well, PAs can still prescribe opioids in a hospital or a nursing home environment, just not in regular family practice or a clinic. Only the NP can do it because it has to be done on a triplicate form. And that's one, first of all, that's extra money for the government because it costs the doctor extra money to get that certification to prescribe those and to write those triplicate forms. But it's inconvenient for your patient. And sometimes, for example, you got a veteran with chronic pain, you know, bad knees from jumping out of airplanes, you know, musculoskeletal pain, and they also have irritable bowel syndrome that's mostly dominated by diarrhea. So you put them on an opioid, which gives them the constipation, it controls the diarrhea and the musculoskeletal pain, and they become more functional.
Yeah.
But they are what's the word I'm looking for? They're kind of dependent on it, but it's not.
Yeah.
They're not abusing the medication. They're depending on that medication to maintain functionality. I don't see anything wrong with that, but your government does because, well, opioids are not indicated for IBS diarrhea, and your insurance companies won't pay for it. Most of the hydrocodones and the Tylenol 3s are only indicated for cancer pain.
Yeah.
But that's, you know.
Oh, I know.
We don't practice.
And now
medicine,
that I.
We practice politics.
Yeah. And it's unfortunate. It really is.
Yep. Our insurance companies tell us what we can prescribe because our patients can't afford the medication that's going to make them better.
Well, that's why that's one of the conversations I've had with some of my patients, that Medicaid, Medicare, and all insurance companies, in all honesty, they need to have a doctor on staff.
They do.
They do.
I do peer-to-peer with doctors on the insurance companies all the time. I'll order an MRI, and next thing you know, I have to talk to the insurance company doctor on why does this patient really need this MRI. So, no, they do. All insurance companies have doctors on staff.
Oh, do they?
And yes, ma'am. It wastes a lot of our time as a provider having to explain to these doctors why I want an MRI. Because they don't want to pay for it.
I think it would be better because they would say, yeah, they do need that. Look at their chart. They do.
The doctor is on the insurance company's payroll. The doctor's job is to save that insurance company as much money as they can.
So it
boils down to statistics. So you push the statistics in your favor. So that doctor will say, well, did you try this first? And if you said no, you don't need the MRI. But you know the guy's got a tumor growing because his left eyeball is fucking bulging out of his head. You know,
like the VA. You do your Motrin, Motrin and Rice and all that shit, and then you do physical therapy, and then you'll go to UC your ortho doctor.
That's right.
You know, you. Oh, and then they'll do the X-rays, CTs, MRIs, and yada yada shmada and all that cool shit. Then you go to ortho. And then ortho's going to try other.
Well, and or pain management, you know. So think of the pain management.
Oh, okay.
And then
yeah, they never offered that to me.
Yeah, once you get to, if you go to pain management, and then they'll be like, okay, well, I need an MRI. So, because I think this person probably needs like an episteroid injection and L4, whatever. But I need to prove it on the MRI. But the pain management doctor has to put you through the physical therapy first, and it has to fail. And the ibuprofen and the Motrin and the naproxen or NSAIDs or whatever, they also have to be shown to have failed. And then they might
embrace it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Once, in all honesty, the one thing that I did notice the last 18 months that I haven't worked, every time I get up, my hip, my back, I just hurt all over. Now that I'm back to work, I actually don't hurt as much because I'm moving more. I don't need
That's why they think that physical therapy can come first before you go out for the, you know, the expensive imaging, which makes sense, right?
Oh, true.
But let me ask this. Say you had a problem with your back and it was hurting, and the doctor did a physical exam and determined that you had an L5 neuropathy because you have no strength in your big toe to do a dorsiflexion. So, okay, I know it's an L5 neuropathy on a sciatica issue. So I want to order an MRI of the lumbar spine. The insurance company calls me up. The doctor from the insurance company says, well, did you do an X-ray first? What do I need the X-ray for? I already know it's a pinched nerve because of my exam, but I have to do the X-ray first. And it has to show an abnormality, maybe some, you know, loss of the disc space or whatever, or, the you know, between the vertebrae or some sort of arthritis, or it has to be perfectly normal and the patient is still symptomatic. But then have you tried physical therapy and an NSAID approach? And then I'll get the MRI. After I knew all they had to do was the MRI to begin with, and I could either pop this guy in the back with a little bit of steroid or send him to ortho for a decompression.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I mean, it depends on the insurance company and the facility, too.
We don't practice medicine anymore. We practice politics. And our medicine is dictated by what the insurance companies will do. I will tell my patients, this is the best medication for you, but it's going to cost $300, and they're going to say, well, I'm just going to die then. But the insurance company will offer you this medication. It may or may not help. But do they blame the insurance companies? No, they blame the doctors. They say, you don't know what you're doing. I've been going to you forever, and you haven't been able to cure me or treat my pain. You don't know what you're doing. But the thing is, the doctor's hands are tied. Their hands are tied. And I wish we could explain. We try to explain that to the patients, but a lot of times they don't even come back. And then they'll go out there and they'll be on health grades and all these other places where they rate doctors. They'll give them bad reviews. But it's not the doctor. But the patient don't know that. The patient don't know that.
Oh, no. So let's get
back. Hey, guys. I had somebody waiting. I told him 5 minutes. I've been here 20. I love you guys. Bobby, I love you. You guys take care. Happy Veterans Day, everybody. Get up there and show your pride parade and all that good stuff. And I'll try to get up with you next week.
Okay.
Did you
disappear, Bobby?
Free beer.
Bobby? Wow. He's napping.
Oh, wow.
I'm here.
Okay, we can call it.
I think I put
good night, brother.
Hey, happy Veterans Day, brother.
Yeah, you too, brother.
Thanks, man.
I didn't know today was Veterans Day.
it's
Thursday.
Every day's Veterans Day. Hello.
That's right.
Oh, I know. That's the whole month of May.
I'm gonna go get this home visit to this patient, and once I get done, if I get done tuning up, I'll hop back on and talk to you guys before closing time.
Awesome.
Next week, and otherwise, happy Veterans Day to all you vets.
You too, brother.
All right. Good night.
Good night. You got way off topic, really, but that's okay. leave it to us to get off topic.
Stuff.
I thought it was very interesting. My grandma.
No, I know.
But
yeah.
We get off topic. Well, it's not off topic completely, but, you know, somewhat.
We're
sinus.
Used to that.
I know. My head's like fucking, I don't know, a bag of Skittles. You never know what you're going to get. So bursitis is another, I know, I don't know if anybody has bursitis or had it or whatever. We all know it sucks. But they recommend, and like we said, we've said over and over again, talk to your doctor about your dose, if you should get it. And like he was saying, they do the blood work, and they'll tell you what you're lacking in your body. But they recommend beta-carotene, calcium, magnesium, selenium, vitamin A, C, E, and zinc. Surprised there's not vitamin D on there, but that's bones, and bursitis is your joints anyway. Fibromyalgia is manganese, vitamin A, B complex, C, and E. I don't know if you guys know this or not. Fibromyalgia back in the day, I'd say back in the, they've been in this for 21 years. I'd say about 15 years ago. Actually, no, it might have been more than that. It might have been about 18. Doctors would not acknowledge fibromyalgia. They just said it was like a symptom. You know what I'm saying? And they said it wasn't a real issue. And now they finally have acknowledged that it's an actual diagnosis. And there are people that have fibromyalgia, and it just, it's kind of like chronic fatigue syndrome, same thing. But with chronic fatigue syndrome, they know that you're deficient in your vitamins and minerals, and vitamins and minerals, and other things that make you chronically fatigued. And just because it's called chronic fatigue syndrome, it does not mean you're just lacking sleep. No, there's a reason why you're tired. You could be anemic, and things like that. So that's why you need to pay attention to your body, talk to your doctor, and just because he doesn't, if you go to them with, could this be it? And they're like, no. You don't have to shop around. You could get a second opinion to make sure. There's nothing wrong with second opinions, just to make sure. But you could also be a persistent pain in the ass. And just keep going and tell them, look, this hurts, or this, or this, or whatever. For fractures, calcium, magnesium, vitamin C, D, and zinc. Definitely your calcium and your vitamin D. Yeah, those are definite for fractures. Not to mention, everybody's different with fractures. It takes roughly 6 weeks for a fracture to heal, depending on one, how bad it is, where it's at, your age, and your mobility level. And the other thing about fractures, actually, the thing about any injury or anything like that, some pain is good. You know what I'm saying? Tolerable pain, 3, 4, maybe a 5. But once you're in excruciating pain, your body can't heal. That's one thing I've noticed. The higher your pain level, the less you're going to heal, or the slower you're going to heal. There are people that have a high tolerance for pain. You know what I'm saying? I'm sure a lot of veterans have a high tolerance for pain. And unfortunately, that's why it takes the big guns for pain management. When a doctor gives me Lortab or Tylenol number 3, and I look at them like they're high or stupid. I'm like, dude, seriously, this is nothing more than, I might as well just take Motrin because it doesn't touch my pain level, unfortunately. It hasn't been so recently that actually Percocet or Darvocet actually works now. Unfortunately, I got to take them closer together. They say 4 to 6 hours. I have to take them every 4 hours. And then sometimes they'll prescribe something for breakthrough pain. So, and I can't take morphine. So I can only take Dilaudid if it's severe, severe. And the only time they do that for me now is when I had the kidney stone, they gave me Dilaudid because I can't have morphine. And when I had my hysterectomy. So I know this from the, from my experience at the VA, that's the only time they would give that is surgery or extreme, extreme pain. And you only get so many of them. And then they're like, no, you can't have any more. So, and that, and that's the other thing. I don't really take them all the time. So I don't know about you, Bobby, but if you get pain medicine, in all honesty with myself, I don't always use the heavy-duty pain meds. I'll use it to where it's if I'm crying, doubled over in pain, yes, I'll take one. But other than that, I'll do the Motrin. Well, no, I can't do Motrin. But I would do the 800 of Motrin or ibuprofen, whatever, and reserve that because they're a pain in the ass just to get any type of pain medicine. They really are. Heel bone, spur, bone spurs, calcium, magnesium, vitamin C. I hate bone spurs. Have you ever had bone spurs? Anybody? Maria?
In my lower spine.
I've had bone spurs on my shins. Or shin splints, whatever you want to call them.
Well, no, I had mine on my foot, on my heel.
Yeah, I've had
that
one.
Hurt like a bit.
I do have bone spurs on my cervical spine and my lower spine. And they hurt. They're literally a pain. Muscle cramps, we've got calcium, magnesium, potassium. B complex, B1 and 3, C, D, and E. And I thought it was, but I've learned a thing or two from Phil about the magnesium and muscle cramps. Because I always thought it was, potassium, because that's always what they throw, potassium down, or your sodium. And not realizing magnesium is another big thing. But like you said, anytime I get muscle cramps, I always throw bananas, strawberries, depending on where you're at and how fast, you know what I'm saying, eat a banana, eat some strawberries. Also, depending if you're a diabetic, diabetics can't really eat a whole lot of banana. So you have to watch out for that. Osteoporosis, calcium, magnesium, vitamin A, D, E, and zinc. Your calcium, you can either get the calcium or you could do your dairy products, your milk and dairy products and things like that. Paget's disease, beta carotene, calcium, folic acid, magnesium, manganese, phosphorus, vitamin A, B complex, B12, C, D, and zinc. Pretty much you need zinc for everything. It's what they recommend. You got to have zinc. You do have to have zinc. You really do. It's important to have zinc in your diet. So respiratory and allergies and things. I don't know if anybody else is having issues with their allergies, but mine are sucking big time right now. So for asthma, they say beta carotene, calcium, manganese, vitamin A, B complex, B6, B12, C, and E. For bronchitis, beta carotene, A, B complex, C, E, and zinc lozenges. And also with bronchitis and stuff like that and other respiratory, those damn things you stick in your shower. Not menthol, but you know what I'm talking about, them little things, not Vicks, it might be Vicks. Dawn brought it up that she uses them a lot for any respiratory issues. Those work too. And I can't think of what they're called, crap. It might be the those Vicks things, and you can put them in your humidifiers. Chemical allergies: copper, selenium, vitamin A, B complex, B6, CE, and zinc. Common cold, beta carotene, A, C, and zinc lozenges. You know, another thing is, especially with the colds and with corona or the rona or whatever you want to call it, a lot of people have a vitamin D deficiency. So that's why I take my vitamin D. Oh, and that's the other thing about vitamin D. People with low vitamin D, I found out that can also help lead to the chronic fatigue syndrome. I did not know that about vitamin D, so that's why I started taking mine. Cystic fibrosis, beta carotene, vitamin A, B complex, B2 and B12, C, E, and K, and zinc. Emphysema, they say beta carotene, A, C, and E. Think about emphysema, COPD, and all of these extreme respiratory issues. If you're not on oxygen already or supplemental oxygen as needed or at sleep, whatever, try not to sleep flat in your bed. You will start with a slow elevation, like, you know, like 30%. Some people, like my dad, got to where he had to sleep at a 45-degree elevation. We had to put a blanket under his bed, and then he ended up in a hospital bed. But it's lifting up the air, your rib cage, and opening things up from you separate your diaphragm and everything else. And you'll notice that a lot of emphysema patients, COPD patients, when they get short of breath, they actually, when they're sitting up, they lean forward and they actually pick their chest up and they stretch it up because it's one way they breathe. The other thing that I noticed, like with myself with asthma attacks, I cough now to catch my breath. So it's not like necessarily, a smoker's cough. It's because it's sometimes that's your body's natural way of trying to catch its breath. Hay fever, vitamin A, B complex, B5, B6, C, and zinc. Vitamin C is really important with all of your respiratory. Not to mention raw honey. With any respiratory issue, especially your colds and flu, you know, all that stuff, I do the herbal teas with honey because honey is a natural antibiotic. And I brought it. I need to do the recipe for it. But if you do the raw honey, vanilla, ginger, turmeric, and cinnamon, it actually makes a natural syrup. And it actually works. My son was a guinea pig, and I said, dude, here, take it. And, yeah.
You were going to put that recipe in Telegram a few weeks ago.
I know. And I started working, and then my life has been downhill ever since.
I know.
What did you guys do last night's show on?
Current topic. It was me, Bobby, and Lorna.
Oh, you did another current event? Okay. I felt bad. I was just so tired.
I was it the other night that was current event. No, I think it was last. I don't know. I was wasted. Last night was. I'm pretty sure it was current event.
Because I was like, I'm tired. And then I worked this weekend. I worked eight days, nine days. Huh?
You just don't love us anymore.
No, I'm done. I've worked 9 days straight, and I won't get a day off until Saturday. And so, in all honesty, it's not okay. I can have three patients. One, it's how long are you spending with each one? What all do you have to do? The driving between each one, and then the charting on them. And that's what, in all honesty, it's the driving. Driving sucks. Straight up, it sucks. And you, 'cause not only do you deal with the patient and then their family, if they have the family there, then you have to deal with other drivers and their bullshit, like bad drivers, construction, and things like that. And that's why I was just dead to it. I'm like, no, I went to bed at 9 o'clock last night. And I worked on like two charts. No, I'm done. And that was it. I went to bed at 9 o'clock. I was up at 6 o'clock this morning. But it is, you know, it is what it is. I like nursing, but it's just the adjustment. Dog, move. You bite me, and I swear to God, I will kick you. Dog's having a little... Keep growling at me. My dog's sitting there next to me growling at me. You're at my chair. You hear him? You hear this little shit? He comes over here and invades my space, and then he growls at me because I want him to move. I slap the shit out of him. Okay, sinusitis, beta carotene, vitamin A, B complex, B5, B6, C, and E. Also, some other naturopathic ways is the neti pot. Doing the herbal teas with the honey. On your those ocean spray, not the drink ocean spray, the ocean spray saline, you can clean your nose out with that, and it's not a big deal. As a matter of fact, I'll spray it 3, 4, 5 times and just lean my head forward and then hold a paper towel or napkins underneath it and let it drain out. You could also do the Cool Mist humidifiers. The Vicks humidifier, try not to get the Vicks the nasal spray, because it's medicated. You can use it. Don't get me wrong. You can use it, but you can get a rebound effect. So anything that's like that, you should only use it for, like, I think it's no more than 7 days. I'm not completely sure. On those, but now they give you prescription nasal spray, and you know, for the life of me, I cannot think of what they are. Shit. Anybody that has sinus or allergies, some of those nasal sprays?
Yeah, I had sinusitis a lot growing up. These days, no, I haven't had it in a very long time. I would get post-nasal drip, and then it would get back to get the sinusitis. I do use a saline spray, though, in the wintertime, because so my sinuses don't get clogged up. I don't like aspirin. I don't like any of that stuff. My sister, every now and then, she'll get it, you know, from the doctor because her sinuses get infected. I think that's the Flonase one. And my nephews take allergy medicine. And I'm like, I'm not doing that. I don't want to put that shit up my nose. So I just do saline. I mean, if it gets really infected, I don't really have a choice. But
oh, true. You can get those sinus infections that once you start. Okay, here's the thing about sinus infections. When you blow your nose, and I know this might be TMI now for some people, when you blow your nose and you smell copper and other metallic smells, you have a sinus infection.
Yeah.
No doubt, it's a sinus infection. because that's what it is. I mean, it's I'm not supposed to describe it, but you've got a sinus infection. Now,
right.
Vicks nasal spray, you can overuse that. And see, here's the thing about any of those medicated Afrin, Vicks, and things like that.
Yeah.
It's a rebound effect, but you're not supposed to use them like you do the saline spray. Saline spray you can use every 10 minutes if you have to. The Afrin and the Flonase and all of those, no, you can't.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought it was like Flonase or something.
Flonase you're supposed to use once a day a day.
Right.
The Afrin is like every 6 hours. Some of them is every 12 hours. So,
yeah, that's what 12, most of them 12. I know there were one or two. Like I said, I'll stick to the saline. I'll just
yeah,
saline.
And then let's see, what is it? I'm trying to think. Nasal spray addiction is not true. You're not addicted to the spray. You're addicted to breathing. Okay, that's the issue. It's not like, oh my God, I need a fix. I need my nails. No, that's not what it is. You need to breathe. That's the difference. And that's what your issue is. But yes, you can use saline spray all you want until the gals come home. And yes, the neti pots and those other things. If you have a really, 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 really bad sinus infection or allergies, get yourself a humidifier, because guess what? Now that fall's here and it's starting to get cooler, colder, and people start using their heaters, the heat can dry out your sinuses. So it's not necessarily a sinus infection or allergies. Your sinuses are just dried out. Depending on if you have gas heat, propane heat, or electric heat, it's all the same. It all sucks ass. And my house gets too dry, so we don't even put our heat above 65. Can't breathe. I'll put my air on 68. Believe it or not, my AC goes on 68. The heat goes on 62. I don't know what the difference.
No,
I don't know.
Like right now, my thermostat, I have a baby space heater. It's set at 6. Now, when I go to sleep, depending on the weather, I might put it to 70. But my window right above my head is open about an inch all night long, because I don't like it too hot, but I don't want to risk getting it too cold either, because I've had some nights that drops down to 20, low 30s. And
here's the thing. You can always put a blanket on and cover up. If you can't breathe, that's no. And I can't do it. So if it's over 62 with the heat, I can't breathe.
Yeah.
It's awful. So what you could do is
CPAP.
So you can do.
I just remember to put on my CPAP.
That too. You can always get a cool mist humidifier to help moisturize your air. Or if you don't have one, take a huge, huge, huge pot, the biggest pot you can find, fill it full of water, put it on your stove, and put it on a low setting. Because you got to keep an eye on it all day. One pot should last all day long. And you can humidify your house that way. Now, I had propane heater, those big, huge radiators, those big ones, and we used to take a pot of water and stick it on that because it would heat it up enough to vaporize the water. But the thing is, you have to make sure you have water in it like every 8 to 10 hours. And I would use those big 10-quart pots so I didn't have to do it as often. But, yeah, we're gonna be getting into the fall. and winter, and you'll see all of that cool stuff. Smoking dependency, beta carotene, folic acid, vitamin A, B complex, B12, C, E, and zinc. I can't help you with smoking dependency. I don't have anything.
Smoking.
Smoking.
Yeah, that's mind over matter.
I know
you could
either
addiction because of the nicotine and all this other stuff. And for the most part, it's mental.
Yeah, but in order to help people quit, you can chew gum in between.
Right.
You could do the do hard candy like peppermint.
Yep.
I don't give a crap. Whatever. You can do that to help, or do the nicotine gum.
Yeah. Here's something interesting, Kim. Here's something interesting with regards to smoking. Did you know that when you drink alcohol, it flushes the nicotine out of your system? That's why the majority of people smoke more when they're drinking?
No. I did not know that.
Yeah.
For tuberculosis, it's selenium, vitamin A, B complex, B5, B6, C, D, and E. TB, your life's going to suck for the next 3 years. Antibiotics are anywhere from 24 to 36 months.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it's treatable. It didn't used to be.
Oh, it's treatable. Oh, yeah. It's treatable. A lot of homeless people end up with TB. But here's the thing. Until you get the first month that you've got it, they put you, because a lot of them have to be. It's a negative pressure room in the hospital. You're in isolation, and it's a special. Now some hospitals, older ones, are not equipped for this. You just flick a switch, and it makes it a negative pressure room. But some of your older hospitals, what it looks like is a portable air conditioner, and it pumps the air out of the facility, and that's how they make it a negative pressure. And then what you got to do is the nurse will have to take a piece of loose leaf paper, and what they have to do is stick it in front of the door. And if it just sits there, it's not working. It has to actually suck the paper to the room to make sure it works. But yes, your life's going to suck for a while because you are on antibiotics. I looked it up, and it used to be, and it might, I don't know, it might depend on the doctor, the medication, or whatever, but usually it used to be 18 to 24 months. But now, some places, I guess, it's 24 to 36, also depending how bad it is. And a lot of times when it's homeless people that have TB, they'll have what we call alphabet soup of illness. They could have HIV, hepatitis, and every other illness on top of that. So... But actually, TB, anybody could get TB. So don't think that if you live in a highfalutin house, you could still get TB. Sorry, you're not excluded from the club. But it's most people that get it, like I said, are the homeless and a lot of people who live with a shit ton of people in your house.
Oh,
yeah, quarters. You'll see a lot of shelters. Some of them have TB because there's just so many people in one big room. Yeah.
There's nothing they can do to prevent it. I mean,
no, not really. Well, that's why they make you leave. That's why they make you leave during the day. You're not allowed. You're only allowed to sleep in shelters. You can't stay there, and they kick you out during the day, and then you can come back. But a lot of Hispanic families in Florida have TB.
Uh-huh.
Let me rephrase that. A lot of migrant families.
Yeah,
because they were put they will put three and four families in one house. I did notice that. I saw that in Georgia and in Florida. A lot of migrant families who follow the crops. And it's not that they're doing anything wrong, because they're not. And that's why we stress, like, God forbid, if something happens, a cold will spread like wildfire the more people you have living in your home.
Right.
If you have to, like we talked about in the survival book, if you have to go off-grid, if you have to, you know, and you have, like, a bunch of people living in the same, like, if just say we had to go live in the land, and
right.
everyone had tents and shit, or campers, whatever, you're still separated, but everybody's still together, and you're still around each other. So that's the important thing, and that's why they thought, and you know what, it makes sense for a lot of things, actually for anything. The stomach flu and your cold and bronchitis, all that shit spreads like wildfire. Pink eye, too. That's another one. Pink eye spreads like a mother. And so you're, like, quarantined if you get any of those, and C. diff. Those are the things that spread the most, the fastest. So, yeah. All right. Skin disorders. How much time have we got left? We got time? Oh, we got plenty of time. Well, I'm not going to finish it, but skin disorder, acne. Chromium, picolate, vitamin B complex, B3, B5, B6, and zinc. Okay, everybody want the down low on chocolate and acne? It's a bullshit lie.
Oh, I know that. Well, yes,
but yeah,
no.
But
it depends. Some people it does affect them, but it's not the sole thing.
No, it's not. Here's the thing. I think it has to do with the percentage of cocoa. Like milk chocolate is like almost none. It's like minimal. And then you have your supreme dark chocolate. And I wonder if it's that. It's not the caffeine. It's not the caffeine. And soda's got caffeine.
That.
Yeah, so, but remember how they told us back when we were kids and teenagers, oh, don't eat too much chocolate, you'll get acne. No. They finally came. The same thing with your grandparents eating table salt on everything. They took salt away from everybody. Now they say, oh, no, it's okay to have some. Same thing with eggs. It's always something.
Yeah.
And now, remember how they said white bread's not good for you? Come to find out, it's wheat bread that's not good for you. Our bodies are not meant to eat wheat. It's too harsh.
Well, white bread is wheat. Well, it's air, but it's sugar.
It's bleached.
I'd rather make my own. Homemade white bread, I mean, is okay. But I like wheat
bread.
Well,
it also depends on which flour you use. But here's the thing.
Flavor.
But don't forget, it depends on what type of flour you use.
True.
There's bleached flour, unbleached flour. There's soy flour. There's... there's oat flour, huh?
If wheat bread, my point was, is that pretty much all flour is, I mean, that majority of people that eat bread, you know, when you say white bread, it's either flour from wheat or from, well, if they eat potato bread, but even the majority of white bread is made from white flour, which is still wheat. So I guess the issue with the whole wheat is it's not as refined.
That could be what it is. But our bodies were not meant to eat wheat. They're not. It's not. It's just too harsh. We still eat it, and everybody's body can adapt to it. Some can't. Mine can't. I cannot eat it. I don't have an intolerance. I have an allergy. And it depends on... Like I said, and it's not just wheat, barley, and rye. It's gluten. Gluten is actually the preservative. It's the filler. And so gluten. So yes, you're not going to get wheat and spices or wheat in your medication or cereal. Well, yeah, you can eat wheat and cereal like shredded wheat. But it's the actual gluten itself that's in wheat, barley, and rye. That's why I can't have it. Anywho, but yeah, that's the whole deal about now, the thing about why women eat chocolate on their periods, it's what is it that's in it that raises your the hormone? I'm having a brain fart.
It begins with an O.
Lorna, is she on or is she off?
I don't know.
I know she eats a lot of chocolate.
Antioxidant.
No, that's
She's
not it.
She's sleeping.
Oh, okay. Why?
That's all I can figure.
Well, she's been helping her brother. Maybe she went downtown again and got lost.
Probably.
Oh, she's not at your house. That's right. What the hell is it called? But yeah, the dark chocolate is more beneficial to your body than it does have antioxidants, the dark chocolate. But what I was talking about is it raises your not endorphins.
Melatonin?
Huh?
Melatonin?
Nope.
Dopamine?
Nope. No, it's what antidepressants. I'm having a brain fart, and I'll know it when I hear it. it has that in it that helps raise those levels in you. For crying out loud! Hold on a second. I'm looking it up. Hold on.
I'm not going anywhere.
Okay. With depression. And watch it be something stupid.
Lithium? Thorazine?
No. Hold on. It's your... Hold on! I'm looking up... serotonin! Jesus!
Serotonin, okay, yeah.
I couldn't think of it. I'm like, what the hell? Yeah, and that's what what it is, and it helps raise your serotonin levels. But there's neurochemicals in dark chocolate. So, and the antioxidants, and it helps fight inflammation. And all of that cool stuff. Your dopamine levels. It's your dopamine.
Yeah,
hydroxylase.
That's
what it is. No, I know, but I didn't know about the dopamine. But it raises. Shut up, dog. I'm going to throw a shoe at you. People are going to think I'm abusive to my dog, and he's just aggravating as hell. Little bastard. Oh, shut up.
He's like, Mom.
Oh, he took my couch. That's where he was whining at. I had a couch. I threw my couch out, and my neighbor's like, oh, I'll take it out for you. And it's been sitting out here for like 2 weeks, and he must have taken it, and that's why they're flipping out. I tell you, my dogs can hear stuff, and then sometimes they don't hear shit. Okay. Anywho, blah, 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 burns, bruises, they say vitamin C and vitamin K, burns, beta carotene, potassium, vitamin A, B complex, B12, C, E, and zinc. Also, go, lay down. The thing with burns, remember, don't go old school. Like grandmama used to do, butter, lard, Crisco, and all that shit. Do not put that on burn.
No,
or lotion.
You told us that before.
Huh?
You told us that before.
I know.
I'm not going to
see my old
yet.
Yes, come on. Well, I'm just saying because, you know, old school people like to do whatever.
Oh, yeah.
And remember, never put hot water, warm water, or cold water on a burn. We always use room temperature and all that cool stuff. Okay, let's see. Chicken pox. Beta carotene, potassium, vitamin A, C, E, and zinc. Now, depending on how old you are, depends on if they give you Zovirax. Zovirax is an antiviral. Zovirax they use also for some of your STDs, but it's an antiviral, and chickenpox are viral. That's what they gave me. That's all I know. Of course, that was 25 when I got chickenpox. 90% of the time, if you're under 20, life's going to suck for you for a while. besides itching, they have Benadryl, calamine lotion, oatmeal baths, and things like that for chickenpox. Oh, and there's something else that we were talking about, lymphedema. The patient that I have, he's got lymphedema. He also has congestive heart failure. If you have, and apparently I did not know this, and I learned something. Congestive heart failure patients cannot use Epsom salt foot soaps or baths, period.
That's interesting.
I didn't know that. But it's probably because it's salt, so, and you have congestive heart failure. So, yeah, you cannot, and some people wouldn't think of that. But, yes, you cannot use Epsom salt to soak your feet if you have congestive heart failure. I did not know that.
I said that's very interesting.
Yeah, it's just because you're soaking your foot in salt water, and Epsom salt is a super concentrated salt. It's not like table salt, and it's going to soak into your skin. Now, normally, that would help with swelling, and if you had lymphedema, yeah, it probably would help, but not unless you have congestive heart failure as well. So cold sores, fever, blisters, vitamin B complex, C, and zinc lozenges. It also, not a whole lot you could do for that. Dandruff, they say selenium, B complex, B6, B12, E, and apparently zinc lozenges for dandruff. Okay. I don't know what a zinc lozenge in your throat got to do with it. but also you can use like the Head and Shoulders, peppermint scrub shampoo is another good one because it goes right to the root of your scalp. So that's another good shampoo to use. Some people can't use the Head and Shoulders and all of that, but there are other types of shampoo that you can use for that. Dermatitis, biotin, B complex, B3, 6, and B12. A dog bite, vitamin C.
Really?
Hopefully not a rabies shot. Dry skin, vitamin A, B complex, B12, E, and zinc. Also, a lot of your lotions are made with vitamin E already. Now, some work better than others, of course. So, just read them, and it all depends. Cocoa butter, what's some other ones? Cocoa butter, the Eucerin lotion, Dermabond. There's quite a few that's good for dry skin. Eczema, biotin, B complex, B3, B6, B12. Before you use it, hydrocortisone cream and stuff like that, ask your doctor or a pharmacist. Fungal infections, A, B complex, B5, C, E, and zinc. Also, there's tenactin, all the different foot powders, the creams, and all that cool stuff that you can use. And gold bond. Gold Bond actually has two different ones. There's the yellow one, and then there's the medicated. So it all depends on you and how bad it is. Gangrene, potassium, and vitamin C.
I didn't know there was any kind of treatment for gangrene.
Well, I mean, I would think there'd be more to it than just those two. But gangrene, you're screwed. You're gonna either lose a body part.
If you get gangrene, you're pretty much, you know, that limb is pretty much got to be going.
Oh, you could. Yeah, but here's the thing: you could get gangrene anywhere in your body. You could get gangrene in your intestines. It just oxygen has been cut off to that part of your intestines.
Yes,
so yes, you
can. Removed. I mean, it's dead. You can't fix it.
Oh yeah, well, hold on. There's another term I've seen one time, and that's been many moons ago. Hold on. What is? I think it's called Pseudomonas. I can't remember how to spell it. Pseudomonas aeruginosa or something like that. Hold on a second. There it is. Pseudomonas. Oh, it's PS. Well, excuse me. let's see. Hold on. A Pseudomonas aeruginosa. It's a bacteria. It's found in the soil and in water. And you could get it in your lungs, which is pneumonia, and other parts of your body after surgery. There's one that I can't remember if it's – and here's the thing about all these COVID patients. You ready for this? Anyone who's on a ventilator can end up with Pseudomonas aeruginosa.
I just know it's a walking death. Yeah.
Also, catheters and wounds from surgeries or burns. It's like gassy. There's one that turns into almost like it looks like gas. And I might be thinking of something else besides the Pseudomonas. You could get it in your urinary tract infections, soft tissue infections. So, and it's also a multi-drug resistant pathogen. So that's why we're talking about. Do you really need a Z-Pack? No, you don't. Do you need to be on? And that's why we have MRSA and VRSA and VRE,
yep.
and things like that. That might not be what I was thinking of, but hold on. I mean, it might be. I don't know. My freaking brain hurts. Gangrene. Oh, I spelled that wrong, too. it's a lack of blood flow to or a serious bacterial infection. Usually, it affects your toes or limbs of the body. But you can, I didn't know you can get in your gallbladder. I'm trying to think if there was another one. Yeah, I cannot think of what it is. And it may not have been the Pseudomonas, but it could have been. I don't know. But like I said, I've only seen one case of this. Of this type, and gangrene, by the way, is not contagious.
No.
Okay. NOT. No. Well, some people think that there's everything. No, not everything is contagious. Just because it's a bacteria, that means shit. Okay. That just means it's a bacteria. Anywho. Who the hell? Insect bite, vitamin C. Okay, hurricanes won. Okay, my bad. Sorry, I'm watching the hurricanes. They're muted. And watching the game at the same time. Oily skin, vitamin A, B complex, B12, E, and zinc. the thing about oily skin, you can have it all over the body, or like me, it's just my face. Everywhere else in my body, I got dry skin. God only knows why, but it sucks. Oh, that's the other thing. They say chocolate gives you oily skin, but it doesn't.
No,
it
never gave me oily skin.
Poison ivy, poison oak, and sumac, vitamin C. Also, you can use Caladryl lotion and Benadryl as well. Psoriasis is a beta-carotene, folic acid, selenium A, B complex, B1, 5, 6, and 12, vitamin C, D, E, and zinc. Also, there's creams and things that you can use for psoriasis and stuff like that. Rosacea, vitamin A, B complex, B12, E, and zinc. Scabies, vitamin A and zinc, but a lot of times, they did not score. What a bullshit thing to do. Scabies, you're also most likely 90% of the time going to have antibiotics and other powders and stuff. Sebaceous cysts, not the same thing as acne. Sebaceous cysts, those are like boils and things like that. Beta-carotene, vitamin A, B complex, B12, and zinc. Personally speaking, I use witch hazel on my skin, on my face. And some people will be like screaming, no, no. Yes, you can.
When I was a kid,
you can use witch hazel. Huh?
When I was a kid, I used witch hazel on my face. Not alcohol.
Yeah.
Witch hazel. Because they're not the same thing.
No, but it has alcohol in it, but not the same amount.
Yeah,
but it's okay to use. Seborrhea, biotin, B-complex, B6, and zinc. Skin cancer, beta-carotene, selenium, vitamin A, B-complex, C, and E. And there's a lot of foods that have antioxidants and things like that that help with cancer, with different types of cancer, matter of fact. Sunburn, potassium, vitamin A, C, and E. You can also use lidocaine, aloe vera. They have aloe vera with lidocaine in it. So, which is the blue one, works a whole lot better than aloe vera. Warts, vitamin A, B complex, C, E, and zinc. Also, they have wart remover, they got biofreeze and all that stuff. And sometimes you have to actually have your warts frozen at a dermatologist's office. So I just took care of a lady who had one, and it was on her wrist. A lot of times warts are a pain in the ass and they don't want to go away. So, and by the way, you have different types of warts. You have genital warts and you have warts like could be on your hand, on your face, whatever. So you have different areas of the body that you can have them. But that is it for the vitamins and minerals and all that cool stuff. I guess next week we can go over different types of diets that there are, like the keto diets, Mediterranean diets, and all that
diets
stuff.
And all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. But that should be all. I'm hoping I could do Saturday. We'll do history. So I'm not working this weekend, so it shouldn't be an issue with me to do Saturday. So.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. I did my 1 weekend a month already. First week I started. And I looked at them today, I'm like, oh, by the way, I did my 1 weekend a month. Don't even friggin' ask. So. But, yeah, that's all.
Are you sure?
I'm done. Yeah, I'm done. Yep. I'm positive. Yeah, I'm positive I'm lost, but yeah. So.
Awesome.
I got some more charting
as
to
usual,
do.
As usual, another great show, and I thank you again for it.
No problem.
And Maria and.
That was great. I learned a bit. I always love it when Phil comes on. Phil,
I hope you learn stuff.
Yeah.
As with anybody else, I hope you guys learn stuff.
Yep.
Definitely.
So.
All right. Well, so. As we close, I appreciate again you doing the shows. Great show. And I'd like to say God bless America. God bless our veterans, our first responders, our children, our military, and God bless the Defender 7. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.